Usually when we talk about a map of the United States, we tend to think about it in terms of like physical distance.
Right, miles, time zones, that sort of thing.
Exactly. But if you were to draw a map of the US based entirely on the financial weight of maintaining a specific professional lifestyle, the geography just, well, it completely warps.
Oh, absolutely. Becomes an entirely different landscape.
Yeah, the distances between cities are no longer measured in miles, but in basically the sheer velocity at which your bank account
You
drains.
start seeing these massive invisible cliffs where the cost of existing just drops off or, suddenly spikes into the stratosphere.
So picture this. It is the first quarter of 2026. If you want to maintain a specific, comfortable, professional standard of living, doing so in Manhattan is going to cost you more than twice the national average.
Which is just astronomical.
Right. But if you take that exact same lifestyle, like the same groceries, the same housing standard, the same level of healthcare, and you drop it into Tupelo, Mississippi, you are suddenly paying nearly 20% below the national average.
What's fascinating here is that we so often talk about the cost of living based on like gut feelings. You notice the price of eggs went up, or you hear a friend complaining about rent.
Oh, constantly. Everyone has an anecdote.
Right. But today, we are looking at hard, granular data. This is the data set that drives billion-dollar corporate decisions.
Welcome to this custom deep dive. We've got some fascinating sources on the table for you today. We are looking at the C2ER Cost of Living Index for the first quarter of 2026.
That stands for the Council for Community and Economic Research, by the way.
Yep, exactly. And alongside that, we had this really interesting strategic analysis titled The Sandoval Advantage, which zooms in on the New Mexico Tech Corridor.
It's a great pairing of sources.
It really is. So our mission for this deep dive is to decode exactly how the cost of living is measured, explore these extreme geographical financial divides, and uncover how major businesses are actually weaponizing this exact data to execute operational arbitrage and relocate the tech industry.
Which is a huge shift. But, before we can understand how companies are exploiting these differences, we really first have to understand exactly what this index is.
And more importantly, what it isn't.
Exactly, because it's highly specific.
Right, so let's break down the parameters. It is crucial to note that this index measures relative price levels for consumer goods and services at a single point in time. It does not measure inflation.
Right, I cannot stress that enough. You cannot take a city's score from this quarter, compare it to 3 years ago, and say, oh, prices went up 10%.
Because the mix of participating cities changes, which shifts the baseline, right?
Exactly. For a historical timeline of inflation, you'd look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yeah, I like to think of it like this. It's like a financial fitness tracker for a specific premium lifestyle in a vacuum, not a historical timeline of the whole economy.
That's a really good way to put it, because it specifically targets professional and managerial households in the top income quintile.
Which means it assumes a pretty high standard of living.
It does. It assumes a mid-management or executive lifestyle, which fundamentally changes the weighting of the data.
Right. And speaking of the weights, I assumed housing would be the biggest factor.
Most people do.
But looking at the anatomy of the composite index, where 100 is the national average, right? Housing is a massive chunk sitting at 28.36%. But the biggest slice of the pie is actually miscellaneous goods and services at 34.47%.
Because a top quintile household has their basic needs met, so they have a lot of disposable income. They're spending heavily on, sit-down restaurants, entertainment, dry cleaning, haircuts.
Basically, a heavy volume of service-based transactions.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this with the formula they provide, just so you, the listener, can see how this works if you're relocating.
Yeah, let's run the numbers.
Okay, say you live in City A, which has an index of 98.3, and you get a job offer in City B, which has an index of 128.5.
So, a noticeably more expensive city.
Right. You calculate 100 times the difference between 128.5 and 98.3 divided by 98.3, and you find out you need a 31% increase in your after-tax income just to maintain your current lifestyle.
Which means if you only ask for a 15% raise because it sounds good, you're actually taking a functional pay cut.
Oh, a massive one.
And to make this formula work across 250 urban areas, the standardization is incredibly rigorous. They don't just ask how much is a doctor visit.
Right, they get hypospecific.
They track the exact price of an American Medical Association procedure 99213.
Wait, really? A specific billing code?
Yes, it's the billing code for a general practitioner's routine exam for an established patient. And for consumer goods, they track things like the cost of a 124 to 144 count box of facial tissues.
Oh, like Kleenex or Puffs.
Exactly. They specify the exact size to prevent shrinkflation from messing up the data. It has to be an absolute apples-to-apples comparison.
So now that we know how this financial tape measure works, let's look at the actual measurements from Q1 2026, because the disparities are just staggering.
The geographical divides are immense.
Let me just read off the extremes. At the top, Manhattan leads with a composite index of 227.6.
Which is just wildly expensive.
Then you have Honolulu at 184.8 and San Jose Silicon Valley at 180.4.
And then on the flip side.
Right, on the flip side, Tupelo, Mississippi is the most affordable at 79.3. Harlingen, Texas is at 80.0. And Richmond, Indiana sits at 80.7.
So places like Harlingen are operating on a completely different economic engine than Manhattan. Cheaper land, lower regulatory burdens, it all trickles down.
And to really grasp this, we need to zoom in on the groceries, because the data collection here is wild.
Oh, it really is. C2ER partnered with a company called DataAssembly for this.
And they don't just send people with clipboards anymore.
No, not at all. DataAssembly pulls from a staggering 320 million current grocery prices and 1.5 trillion historical data points.
That is just an insane amount of data.
It guarantees a nearly flawless reflection of reality. And according to that, Honolulu is the most expensive for groceries at 136.3.
While Grand Forks, North Dakota is the cheapest at 90.3, let me highlight some specific prices from the data to just blow your mind. If you want a ribeye steak in Anchorage, Alaska, you are paying $22.95 a pound.
Wow.
And a half gallon of almond milk, specifically Silk or Blue Diamond brand, again, keeping it apples to apples, is $6.47 in Juneau, Alaska.
Almost $7 for almond milk. But, you know, Alaska and Hawaii dominate the high end purely because of logistics.
Yeah.
Shipping cold chain perishables across oceans or extreme environments just bakes a huge premium into the price.
Right. And gas prices show a different side of logistics. The national average in the index for January 2026 was $2.79.
Although we should note, Newsweek reported it spiked to 4.56 by May.
Yeah, a massive spike.
Good.
But looking at the Q1 baseline, the cheapest gas was in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma at 2.14, and the most expensive was Redding, California at 4.55.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that gasoline disparity is really about infrastructure. Why is it so cheap in Broken Arrow? Because they are geographically close to Midwest oil refineries and pipelines.
So the physical journey of the fuel is just shorter.
Exactly. It strips out transit costs that places like Redding just have to absorb.
Okay, so knowing that California and New York are expensive isn't breaking news. But what is groundbreaking is how tech companies are using this exact index data to execute massive geographical shifts.
They're playing a completely different game now.
Right. And that brings us to the New Mexico Tech Corridor, specifically Rio Rancho and Sandoval County. Because traditional tech hubs, the ones that were supposed to be the cheap alternatives, are seeing massive overhead spikes.
Like Denver and Phoenix.
Exactly. Denver's composite is up to 114.8 and Phoenix is at 108.6. They inflated. But Sandoval County offers a composite index of just 87.2.
Which is the essence of operational arbitrage for site selectors. When you build a data center or an advanced manufacturing plant, you're evaluating decades of costs.
So what are the biggest levers they pull?
Housing and utilities. Rio Rancho's housing index is a shockingly low 74.1 compared to Denver's 132.5.
Wow, so nearly half the cost.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And their utility index is 83.5, which gives these massive data centers, which use astronomical amounts of power and water, crucial long-term cost predictability.
Right, especially compared to Phoenix, which is sitting at 104.2 for utilities.
Exactly.
But here's where it gets really interesting, but also raises a red flag. If it's so cheap, don't you get what you pay for? Doesn't a low cost of living usually mean a less sophisticated labor pool? Where is the talent?
It's the most common assumption, and it's usually true. But according to the Sandoval Advantage source, this region is a complete anomaly.
Really? Why?
Because of a multi-decade anchor presence by Intel. They've been building up the local ecosystem for years. The Albuquerque MSA, which includes Rio Rancho, has an incredible density of talent.
Okay, how do they measure that?
Economic developers use something called the location quotient, or LQ. An LQ of 1.0 is the exact national average.
So 1.0 means you have a normal amount of a specific job.
Right. Sandoval County boasts an LQ of 2.12 for electrical engineers.
Wait, 2.12, so more than twice the national average.
Yes. And 1.78 for aerospace engineers. It's a highly specialized labor pool inside a sub-90 cost of living environment.
So that creates a perfect storm, basically reversing the brain drain. Graduates from UNM and CNM no longer have to flee to Silicon Valley, right?
Exactly. The source mentions they can stay and work for defense innovators like Castellian.
They can design hypersonic systems, make a great salary, and actually afford to buy a house and build equity early in their careers because the housing index is 74.
It fundamentally flips the script. To synthesize all this, from the grocery data to the location quotients, the cost of living isn't just a personal budgeting tool anymore. It is a macroeconomic chessboard.
Companies realize they don't have to compromise between margin health and elite technical capability.
Right. Capital efficiency and talent can actually coexist.
So bringing this directly back to you, the listener, whether you are negotiating a remote work salary, considering a relocation for a new job, or sitting on a corporate board picking a site for a new factory, this index data is basically the ultimate cheat code to maximizing the value of your dollars.
It lets you see the financial reality of the map.
Exactly. But it does leave us with a lingering, kind of provocative question to ponder. If tech talent and corporations continue to flee expensive cities for high-skill, low-cost havens like Rio Rancho, will these affordable hubs eventually inflate to become the very expensive monoliths they were trying to escape?
We saw it happen with Denver.
Right. Are we just watching the birth of the next Silicon Valley, complete with tomorrow's skyrocketing cost of living? Because if the map keeps shifting like this, you really have to wonder where the financial compass will point 10 years from now.